Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell. After I give everything I've got to land a perfect vocal, I usually take five before jumping into the next track. And I've learned exactly how to recharge in that time. Some folks grab coffee. I hit a quick good luck spin. Next thing you know, the break is just as fun as laying down the track. A better break makes for a better take. Need a break? Let's chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hi folks, welcome back to another one of these political chats that we've been having. And today I thought we'd have a talk about what I'm going to call the view from the Starmer Bunker. Now, the Starmer Bunker is the term I've been using to describe the atmosphere inside Keir's cabinet.
I want to see a film of this called, I don't know, Downfall something.
Because it does, but it feels a lot like that.
Yes.
You know, Starmer, like Hitler, is besieged on all sides. Various enemy divisions are moving in. And he doesn't know what to do. And so this is just generally the atmosphere that comes across from the Labour government. Everything they put out, everything they say and do, is under a real atmosphere of tension. Right?
Yes.
And this was best exemplified for me in Keir Starmer's New Year's message. Now, we're going to watch, I don't know, about 30 seconds of this, but just pay attention to his body language.
I haven't seen this. I'm seeing this for the first time. So this.
I mean, he's not the world's greatest speaker anyway.
No.
But when
it's a bit difficult when you haven't got a soul to communicate with other humans.
And like, you've got to come away from this thinking, was this really the best take they could do?
Yeah.
Things have been tough in Britain for a while. For many, life is still harder than it should be. You long for a bit more money in your pockets, a meal out, a holiday, the chance to make a special family moment extra special. In 2026, the choices we've made will mean more people will begin to feel positive change in your bills, your communities, and your health service.
Okay.
I mean, the very first comment is, why does this android sound like he's preaching at a funeral?
Yes, the Starmer bot has been wheeled out.
But that's a great question. Why is he preaching at a funeral? Well, whose funeral is it?
That was Britain's.
That was, exactly. That's
and also, I'm just so cynical that I hear that and I just think he's going to make life better for more people. I just think, yeah, but you're talking about Somalians?
Yeah, single mothers, Somalians and NHS workers.
Yes.
Great, thank you.
He was definitely not talking about making my life better because I'm a taxpayer.
Obviously. And the great thing about this is it really highlights, this is a public-facing talk, right? This is when he thinks he's speaking to the general public. Yeah. Millions of people in the general public are going to see this. So how does he come across? Tense, stilted, robotic, and out of touch with their actual concerns. When he's in his safe space, when he's, you know, in Parliament, oh, I'm the Prime Minister, I've got 400 MPs behind me.
Yes.
Oh, I'm in a position where...
So everybody who has been to a rough school, a comprehensive or whatever, knows this. You get the guy who he's meek as butter if he's facing you alone.
Yes.
But when he's got his mates behind him, he's, you know, Billy Big Balls.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Well, let's watch this.
Can I begin by saying I hope all colleagues had a happy Christmas? It probably feels quite a long time ago now. But not for reform, of course, because today is the day that they celebrate Christmas in Russia.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose mildly funny line, which means he definitely didn't write it. He's managed to find somebody in his office who has a slither of a soul.
But they keep doing this. Yeah. And again, it just looks like the looming terror of reform on the back benches.
Yes.
So, they're celebrating Christmas in Russia on reform. It's like, he's about to destroy you. He is about to destroy you, your legacy, yes. Everything. And the best, and you're Billy Big Balls when you're in Parliament and you've got all your mates around, yes. You. It's like, you celebrate Christmas in Russia. But when facing the public, you're like, I'm a robot and I'm afraid of you. And rightly so. Everyone hates Keir Starmer. I mean, it's just actually kind of remarkable how he went from... if I can get the mouse to... Actually.
How well is Keir Starmer doing as Prime Minister? Yeah, Green line is well, red line is badly.
He started on 43%, which is not great, but it's not terribly unusual, actually.
If I was 43 versus 6, I'd be thinking, well, there's everything to play for. You know, off to a bad start. You know, let's see if I can play my cards well.
Well, that went very badly very quickly, as you can see. And now he was at a peak of 76% negative, but 73% negative, but 15% positive has been remarably consistent.
So what was that? Is that like something like 50? No, that's is that 68%? 58% net negative.
Yes.
Has it ever been as bad? I mean,
no.
Since records began?
No, since records began, Keir Starmer is the least popular Prime Minister on record.
Well, that's impressive.
So the fact that he's Billy Big Balls in Parliament,
yeah.
But very timid when dealing with the public, it's just, look, man, we can see the pressure you're under and you're taking refuge in that safe space that you feel that you have dominance and security.
Your mates around you,
yeah.
Who all happen to be HR... Karens.
And who all happen to be on borrowed time.
Well, yes.
And that's the thing. Everyone knows you're on borrowed time. Like, there's no substance, there's no foundation to anything that you're doing. Mm. And so they seem to be just doing as much as they can. So let's get into the polls, shall we? So this was a Find Out Now poll from 31st of December, putting Reform on 31, Greens on 17, Conservative on 17, Labour on 15, and that's a plus one from the 14 that, remember, we covered last time.
Yes.
Obviously brutal, Labour down to 11 seats.
Well, I mean, we did say at the time that 4 seats was maybe a little bit harsh.
Yeah.
But, I mean, 11, I mean, you've now got enough to play a game of football. You were playing a very small backgammon tournament, and now you can play a game of football.
I don't mean to laugh, but it's so funny watching them get absolutely crushed in public opinion. Then you have this one for The Times, which not as bad, obviously. And to be honest with you, I think these are more realistic ones, right?
Yeah.
So you've got here Reform getting 381 seats, Labour 85 seats, Conservative 70 seats, and then who cares about the rest?
Frame it as not that bad.
It's terrible.
In isolation, this is absolute catastrophe.
Yeah, they're losing 326 seats. I mean, that's probably the biggest wipeout in all of British political history. So...
Yeah, I mean, unless you want to go back to, like, whatever it was, 19...
No, we covered this the other day. It wasn't that bad.
Oh, wasn't it?
It was 146 seats they lost, which is a lot, but...
Right.
You know.
So even the great wipeout of 19, whatever it was, 17, 18, I can't remember now.
Yeah.
That wasn't as bad
as... It wasn't as bad as this, no.
Right.
So, you know, this is just...
People returning from the First World War had a more favourable view of their government.
Yeah. Then you have this one from, when was that one from? Sorry. 2026 voting intention. From More in Common, right, yeah.
Okay.
And so this is quite interesting because this shows quite a heavy lean towards the right. Mm. So notice how the right here is 54% of the overall vote. Labour on 19, Greens on 10.
Well, what this is telling me is that it's difficult measuring small numbers. accurately. Because the only number that never changes is the reform one. That's 31%.
That's
every
true.
Poll that we look at. 31%, 31%. But all the other numbers jump around because it's such a small sample size. Bear in mind, these people, they only interview between like 800 and 1,600.
So, sometimes they're well over 2,000. I mean, they're not
Okay, but still, 2,000, it's not actually...
It's not that many.
It's not that big a number when you're trying to extrapolate up to a population of 70 million or whatever number we're on.
Yeah.
And it, I mean, it just shows that the tail... I mean, this is the long tail. It's measuring accuracy in the long tail. Is what they're essentially trying to do.
Yeah.
And no wonder that second place and third... Well, in fact, all of the places after first just jump around all over the place because nobody has a bloody clue.
And that is true. And this is one of the perennial problems with polling in Britain, but I'm sure in other places, is that, honestly, by methodology, you get different results. Mm. But like you said, the one thing that is consistent is reformers at the top. But I do think there are silent conservative voters that are going to come out. Right, so a lot of people who vote conservative are probably not actually picked up in polls very often because they're not in cities, they're not necessarily wandering around the streets, or they're not answering phones, or they're not on the internet. These sort of, you know, boomers who are watching TV.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a bit embarrassing at this point. It's like coming out, and I don't know anything about football, but last I checked on football, Manchester United was top, at Man City was the bottom. So it's a bit like coming out and saying you support Man City, but that might have swapped around for all I know in the last 20 years.
Maybe. Yeah. Here's the Sky one. So this, I think, is more likely to be closer, because I think the reform on well over 30%, there has been, and we'll get to the averages in a minute, there has been a dip in the average that reform have had, and this is one of the reform on the lower end at 26%. Conservatives at 19%, Labour down 3 on this one to 17%. Again, the Greens up 15%.
So I mean, this is something I wanted to come to, the level of reform support. Because... Okay, this one shows a bit of a dip, which is unusual, but mostly it's 31%.
Yeah,
I remember not that long after the election, you were doing podcasts where you were saying, why is reform stuck at 21%? And something changed. And I don't think that 31% is actually solid reform. I think 10% of that is people who just decided we want to destroy the Labour and Conservative parties, especially after Southport.
I think a lot of reform support is essentially a protest vote. I would say probably about half of it. I think that about 15-20% is Nigel Farage's sort of natural constituency.
Well, I'm fairly certain that at least 10% of it is ethereal.
Yeah.
Maybe you're right, maybe it's half, maybe it's 15%, because they're just 5% just got there a bit earlier by saying, yeah, I want to destroy the Conservative Party and the Labour Party.
Yeah.
The thing that does for me, though, is I don't know why this is, and I need to think it through, and maybe somebody in the comments can explain it who actually have thought this through, but there does appear to be a really material difference between trying to govern a country at 30% versus 20%. For some reason, I mean, Labour, they're just stuck in this quagmire. They're just constantly... they're constantly under pressure because they're closer to 20% rather than 30%, and that seems to matter far more than, say, the difference between 10 and 20 or 30 and 40. So something happens around that level that if you don't have at least roughly a third of the people who are going to vote, you just can't govern. You're just permanently on the back foot, and I'm not sure why that is yet, but that is something I need to think through.
Yeah, I haven't got an immediate answer to that, but it's definitely something worth considering. But what I find interesting, though, and we'll come to it in a minute, is the Starmer government is doing things and they're not actually meeting that much resistance. What they're meeting with is disapproval. People aren't actually actively doing anything against Starmer. They're just like, really, you're going to do that, are you? And they're like, yeah, why not? It's like, well, this is really souring the public's opinion on the spiritual health of the Labour Party.
I kind of wonder if that's a bit like having a neighbour who's a bit of a shit, but he's got stage 3 cancer. And yeah, if he was in robust health,
I didn't even think of it like that.
If he's in robust health, you'd probably confront him, and you'd be like, you know,
you've got to knock this off.
Yeah, your behaviour is out of line, but you kind of look at him and you just kind of think, well, I can also just say nothing and wait a little bit.
Yeah, it's only going to be a few months.
Yeah.
know, so and this, we'll get on some of the things that Labour have done recently. It's just mad. And yeah, so this is one of the reform on the lower end, but I think this is probably going to be more realistic. I think at the moment, as
so which bit do you think is realistic? That the Conservatives come second, or
yeah, the Conservatives come second, I think is fairly realistic, because we've had a few where the right wing vote is actually pretty strong in Britain. Again, people forget that Britain is actually a right wing country, and this, you know, the right having more than half of the yes. vote here, and the left, even if the left was completely combined in many of these polls, yes. still wouldn't actually have the majority of the country.
So I don't want to disagree yet, but I do want to probe a bit.
Yeah.
Because you're right, in basically every election ever, the Conservative vote has been understated.
Yes.
Because people don't like it, because we live in a...
It's unfashionable.
We have lived in a media environment which is strongly left-wing.
Yes.
And left-wing harridans don't face any consequences for being left-wing harridans. So the social cost of admitting that you vote right is higher than admitting you vote left. And therefore, there have always been people who basically shy Tories, is what they call them. Why would that still exist when you can vote reform instead? Why aren't we worried about shy reform voters?
Well, because Nigel Farage is one of the most well-known political figures in the country. Mm. When there are YouGov questionnaires and things that show this, 99% of people know who he is, and 33% of people like him, and 67% of people dislike him. And the number of people who are in the middle, who are not sure, is actually about 1%. Something like
that. He's polarizing it. Okay.
He's a very
polarizing. So maybe there's 2% shy reform, but not 5 or 6.
Well, no, you know, that's, I don't know if we can be sure of that. In fact, I'm going to get into that in a bit, if that's all right.
But I mean, to be fair, I don't like him.
I'm still going to vote for him. Yeah. Right? And a lot of people, especially in places like Wales and London, are probably just going to be like, yeah, okay, I know who Nigel Farage is.
Yeah.
But on the plus side, sure, he might be a prat and maybe I don't want to go to dinner with him, but he is also reliable on Brexit. He's reliable against immigration. He's reliable as a sort of a free marketeer, right?
I actually have had dinner with him down the pub, and he's quite good value with a pint.
I don't doubt. I'm sure I personally would enjoy hanging out with him as well.
Yes.
But the point is, a lot of people don't like the persona that he has.
Yes.
But they at least understand him as a predictable political property, right? They can understand what they're going to get from him. So I think that actually there are going to be a bunch of people who just swallow this immediate dislike of Farage and realize that I'm not going to have to hang out with him. He's just going to fix the economy. He's just going to, you know. Right. Well, yeah. Okay, look. Again, we'll get on to what people think, you know, is not necessarily the same as what he's actually going to do. But the sort of hyper-narrative around Nigel Farage is that he's an extreme right-winger. Remember, everyone's been calling him Hitler for the last 3 weeks all over Christmas, right?
Why hasn't his support gone up more?
Yeah, exactly. Plus three support. Like, it's just...
Right, I'm joking. Yeah, but no, it really actually happened.
Yeah, it really happened.
Okay.
So, anyway... It is possible that there's a bump close to the elections, or Farage just is a ferocious campaigner. Whether you like him or not, he's an excellent campaigner. He knows how to pick issues, and he knows how to polarize on those issues and make the most of them. So, like we discussed last time, I think it is possible that he is being sensible and just keeping his powder dry. I'm already in the lead. I don't need to do anything extreme, give my opponents any ammunition, etc., etc. As you can see from the recent polling that has a dip in reform, that leaves them 26 short of majority on this particular one. So they would have to form a coalition with the Conservative Party, which in and of itself...
Or everybody else would.
Even then, do they have enough? I guess they would... But they would have to have literally everyone else.
You need 325 as a strict majority, but the Sinn Féin guys never turn up, and a lot of the Northern Ireland guys don't vote on some of this stuff. So,
but also, it would require the Conservatives to get in bed with the Greens, SNP, Lib Dems, and Labour.
Yeah, no, actually, I'm not sure. I don't know how Sinn Féin are polling at the moment, but I think that's a bit harsh. Actually, saying you need 326 because that's a total majority, including Northern Ireland, which in practice it doesn't. I think you could form a thinly functional government at 310.
I mean, possibly, but you wouldn't want to.
No.
I think it's more likely that for us, this sounds at this current moment in time actually like quite a plausible result from the next election.
Yeah.
Right. Like, it would be nice if Labour had the 400 seat wipeout.
Yes.
It would be nice if Nige got the stonking majority and the Conservatives reduced to like 40 seats, yes. Labour on 11 seats, Lib Dems on like 90 or whatever. Probably more. It's going to end up more like this.
But it's still really difficult to opine on this stuff when second, third, and fourth place just jump around all over the place. So the last poll had Conservative second as the official opposition, and this one they're in fourth place.
Yes. So who knows, right? But the point is, this would force the Conservatives into a Conservative Reform coalition, which honestly sounds likely. You could completely see that happening in the future, right?
Well, or he just identifies 30 of them and offers them to cross the floor.
Well, whatever it is, yeah. But the point is, that's the new government. So anyway, moving on, Labour are consistently in third place at about 17%. So they're even starting to lose the NHS workers. But again, from the governing majority, you can go back to Keir Starmer at the beginning in the Starmer bunker addressing the public. He's well aware. I mean, he can't possibly be under any false impression that the public don't actually hate the Labour Party. And you're getting down to about, well, you're about a sixth of the electorate who will vote for you.
Yes. Which is and more than a sixth work for the state.
Yes. So you're losing even your core constituency here.
I mean, he's playing destroy the Labour Party on nightmare mode and still achieving it.
Yeah. And even in London, you can see this is the estimate from the average of polls up until December 2025. Even in London, Reform are making gains. Obviously, these areas are the majority.
I'm seeing teal and blue in London.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, maybe Bromley will go. I mean,
there are areas that are...
Stuff like that. But still, that is interesting.
It's atrocious, isn't it? If you're Labour, losing 33 seats in London...
Like, yeah.
And allowing Farage to snap up 18 of those and the Greens to snap up the other 11.
That's interesting. So the losses that Labour are making are three times greater than the gains that the Greens are making.
Yes.
So the Greens aren't even capitalising in a socialist hellhole like London.
Because remember, Labour were the party of the white working class.
Yes. and have basically governed on a platform of being anti-white working class.
Yes, for some reason. And so the coalition in the Labour Party, 18 seats of it was white working class, 11 seats of it was Islamo-communists, and they're just splitting off into their constituencies. So again, just...
So how does the Greater London... I don't know enough about the Greater London Assembly, but how does this function? Because nobody's got enough support to do anything here. But then they're just a check on the mayor.
Yeah, the London Assembly isn't really, as I understand it, relevant to what's happening here.
Right.
They get to interrogate the mayor, was it every week or every month?
Okay. So all this Sadiq means Khan is that it's easier for Sadiq Khan to do whatever he wants?
What, with the Assembly?
Well, if the Assembly is split like this, presumably whatever checking functions that the Assembly
I actually don't know what the powers of the Assembly are. And Sadiq Khan is entirely contemptuous towards the Assembly.
Well, and it goes to show how irrelevant this Assembly is, that two political nerds like us don't have a bloody clue how it works because we've never needed to learn.
No, exactly. It just has never factored into any political analysis I've needed to make. Anyway, so as you can see, Labour, everything that Labour posts now, and they keep posting stuff like this on their Twitter account, 2026 is the year people start to feel the difference with our Labour government. That feels like a threat, right? This seems to be Labour threatening people now. And I don't really want to feel the difference that Labour's making.
No.
They are, I mean, for example, they came up with the business rates on pubs. I haven't even included in this because they do so many things that are atrocious.
Yeah.
And Rupert Lowe is currently leading a crusade on behalf of small business saying, why are you destroying these things? And of course, the answer is, well, the pubs are where revolutions are fermented. Right, the pubs, I mean, this is literally where the American Revolution came.
Didn't I hear that Rachel Reeves is considering some new subsidy to pubs? Because she's taxed them to the point where they're going to break, but they're going to break at a speed that is obvious that she's done it. So rather than reduce the tax, she's now going to start subsidising some of them.
I heard that, but I mean, guess wait until it happens. But anyway, so what exactly are they threatening us with? And what exactly do they think that they're doing? Like, why do they think this is something the public wants to hear from the Labour Party? Because in the Starmer bunker, they must have some really weird ideas going around. And the first one that came to light the other day...
So I've just noticed he's actually smiling.
Well, is he smiling? His eyes aren't smiling. He's pulling the sides of his mouth up, but the eyes aren't squeezed.
But he's at least thinking that he does the thing.
I have to try and make it look like I'm...
And I've only ever seen him do that... Well, the one time before was when he was surrounded by a bunch of African child rapists. And I'm not trying to draw that comparison with people who work at train stations. I'm just saying...
No, of course. They're nothing to do with
it. Yeah, I'm just saying that he very rarely smiles, so it's notable when he does.
Yeah, there must have been... That, I bet they were thrilled to get this photo. But the thing is, what kind of ideas and what kind of mentality is coming out of the Starmer bunker?
Right. Well, and that's staring into the void, isn't it?
Well, exactly. The answer is absolute madness. Right. For example, David Lammy recently came out and said, yes, I'm on a mission from God to end jury trials.
What, he used those words?
Almost word for word, yeah.
He's on a mission from God. God spoke to...
No, I'm overreading that a little bit.
Oh, okay.
But, well, no, I'll read his exact words.
Right.
So, he's basically on a mission from God to abolish Magna Carta, which is mad. He said that his job was to save the foundations of the criminal justice system and the tradition of juries in the face of Crown Court backlogs of nearly 80,000 cases were delaying justice for thousands of victims. Like, okay, our concept of justice is predicated on the Magna Carta. It is on the jury trials. Article 39 of the Magna Carta, which guarantees that no man will be imprisoned or convicted without the lawful judgment of a jury of his peers. Mm. Right? 800 plus years of the English conception of what justice entails.
Which then inspired almost every other legal system around the world.
Yes, this is literally the bedrock of what justice is in this country. And David Lammy says, what does my faith in part call me to centre? It calls me to centre the victims of crime. It calls me to centre the mother in my constituency who's just lost her son to knife crime, waiting 3-4 years for a trial and the victim's falling away. The foundation for me of justice is the idea that whoever you are, you deserve justice.
I mean, there was so much wrong there. I've done jury twice.
Let me finish.
In my
office, I have a photograph of Martin Luther King with Rabbi Herschel marching and campaigning together for civil rights on behalf of groups of people. I was reduced to tears in the first days of my office because I felt it was almost God who sent that I was in the right place at the right time to complete the last bit of negotiation.
Oh, God.
To get the Hillsborough Law.
That is terrible. If he thinks he's...
He literally thinks he's sent by God.
If he's an African child soldier who thinks he's on a mission from God, I mean, that does not work out well, generally.
Like I said, it's not... I wasn't even over-egging it very much. He literally thinks he's on a mission from God to abolish the Magna Carta. Because it's standing in the way of justice.
But it doesn't make sense on the face of it. Because as I said, I've done jury trial twice. It is not the jury that holds up the process. The only thing that the jury does is 10 minutes of shuffling in and out at the end. But the argument takes as long as the argument takes to present. So the only thing that you can get from this is that he thinks that the state is infallible. So when the state brings a prosecution, I think he thinks that the defence barrister is just not even going to present an argument because there's no point. That's the only thing that isn't going to make a difference on timing.
Well, he's on a mission from God, so he can be certain about these things. And
he's not smart enough to be certain about anything.
I mean, I agree. But does David Lammy agree when...
Actually, no. The smarter you get, the more uncertain you get about everything. So maybe he is dumb enough to be certain. That's the way we should look at it.
I think you're right on that. Especially if God is speaking to you. It's coming to you in a dream or something. Like, this is just mad. Absolutely mad. I felt that God sent that I was in the right place at the right time. It's like... That is wild.
This is not going to be good.
No. But like you were saying, interesting about you were saying child soldiers, because he literally intends to recruit child judges to be judging this.
No, this has to be a joke.
Nope. David Lammy has launched a drive to encourage people as young as 18 to volunteer as magistrates to help tackle the court crisis. I don't even know. Are they qualified? I don't know what's happening here. He wants to recruit 2,000 more magistrates of every age and background. So you could have some 18-year-old Zuma Pakistani kid judging you as an Englishman.
For your tweet.
Your tweets. Like, just David Lammy on a mission from God, and like every African warlord is an army of child soldiers.
I mean, given how Zoomers are, that could go very well for you,
sure.
Or very badly.
But I'm sure you'll select the bad ones.
Well, yeah.
If they were the ones we were recruiting.
Is it?
I mean, it's mad, isn't it?
I mean, you got a link, and it's in a reputable paper, so I can't really accuse you of making it up, but part of my brain is not processing this. This can't be real.
Yeah. They've got 14,000 magistrates, but to properly process these backlogs, they need 20,000, so I don't know why he's only getting 2,000. But the point is, they just want to recruit people. I don't know what kind of training they're going to have. I don't know what... I mean, do we have that many magistrates, young magistrates coming up? I've no idea, right?
Well, to the best of my understanding, the way it works with magistrates is three lay people sit there, and then they've got a bureaucrat who tells them what to do, and they basically just do whatever the bureaucrat says. So it's basically direct Mandarin control. Unless you've got at least two magistrates on the same magistrate panel who are independent-minded enough to think around the bureaucrat, which they usually don't.
Because you're not an expert in all this. I mean, these are just volunteers. I mean, he says, magistrates are everyday heroes. We need more people of every age and background to volunteer, not just to deliver justice, but to serve and represent their local communities. Volunteering to become a magistrate can make a real difference in your life and the lives of others. That's why I'm calling on the public to apply. It's like, right, so he's recruiting an unskilled army of child soldiers to get around the fact that they've abolished jury trials to deliver justice to a bunch of people who are on the backlog. So presumably, you know, when you've been tweeting. Anyway, on the other hand, so that's David Lammy, who appears to be...
Can I just quickly say, I would solve this problem by building a lot more prisons, and then you wouldn't have to retry people every couple of years.
Yes, and just deporting a lot of people.
Well, yeah, and that, yeah.
But anyway, so that's David Lammy. He's on a mission from God to ruin the country legally. And Starmer is determined to hand back powers to the EU. So one of the complaints that the Remain types had were like, look, if you come out of the EU, then you don't have any internal negotiating power to set the standards of the EU. So if you want to trade with the EU, you're going to have to match their standards whether you like it or not. And Keir Starmer was like, great, why don't we just put that into law, that whatever the EU dictates as a standard, we just are harmonized with, and so EU law just applies to our country regardless of what happens. It's like, right, so that's the complete undermining and overturning of Brexit.
What's the bloody point of Brexit then? I mean, I suppose that would have been his position.
He was obviously an arch Remainer, you know, obviously. And so this is going to put us into dynamic alignment with the EU under Keir Starmer's reset with Brussels. So it's basically just giving our country away. Like, I don't want to hear anyone...
And the reason this matters is because each individual firm has a decision as to whether they want to sell into Europe or not.
Exactly.
What if I don't want to sell into Europe?
And market pressures would put pressures on the Europeans to change their standards or to change the way they do things, or to give incentives.
I mean, actually, it's not the European, but the Americans have done this. The Americans have made, in financial services, doing business with an American citizen so bloody difficult that what most UK financial firms will do is they just say, I'm not taking American clients because the regulatory burden from the Americans is just too high. That can happen with, and that probably already does happen with products. You just think it's just not worth selling into Europe. And if Europe wants to embargo itself with an impossible regulatory standard, let them do it. But don't subjugate us to that on the off chance that a business three doors down occasionally sells something to Belgium.
But moreover, what he's trying to do is remove our autonomy, remove our ability to negotiate these things on a one-to-one basis, or have any bargaining power whatsoever. And it's like, okay, why would we want that? Like, we could still agree to a certain regulatory alignment with the EU if we wanted, but that could be done on an ad hoc, you know, at basis where it's advantageous to us, rather than being locked into it.
You know what this is? This is King Baratheon. He's just been gouged by a boar, and he's looking at his successor, thinking, "I don't trust this guy to run the place." So he points his friend Ned Stark to do the governing for him in his dying breaths.
Yeah.
That's what he's doing. Yes. He's looking at Nigel Farage and going, "Yeah, I want to hand over every scrap of power to anybody else who is my friend."
And that's, I mean, like, there are so many things that Starmer and his government are doing. I'm just, So we, you know, we're summarizing a lot of this. Like, Nigel Farage is obviously going to save the pubs, right? He's obviously going to abolish the, or massively reduce the business rates that Labour are hiking up on the pubs to save the pubs, right? Mm. Again, Nigel Farage has got many flaws, but having a pint is not one of them, right? No,
he's sound on that one.
Yeah, exactly. We can be pretty sure. And when it comes to being under the heel of the European Union, we can be pretty sure that Nigel Farage is going to be like, we're not having that.
Yes.
Right. So again, he's not perfect, but there are some things on which he's been very consistent.
Yeah, but even we've reached a stage in politics where being a bit shit is still a massive, massive
would be amazing,
improvement.
Yeah. It'd be amazing if it were just a bit shit. So yeah, this all feels like Hail Mary stuff, right?
Yes.
When he faces the public, he knows the public hates him. When they're doing all of this stuff, they know that the public hates it. And they also know that Mr. Brexit is coming. They know that Mr. Brexit is the next guy in line. So doing all of this stuff, it just feels like, honestly, it feels like Hitler being like, right, move, you know, these panzer divisions to intercept the Russians. And his assistants going, well, they don't exist, sir. You know, those things have been destroyed. And Hitler going mad in his bunker.
I don't know. It feels worse than that. It feels like a retreating.
It feels worse than that.
Yeah. No. It feels to me like, and this is more sort of an antiquity thing that you'd probably be more familiar with. But retreating armies salting their own fields, and poisoning their own wells as they retreat.
You know what the thing is though, that's a strategy that makes sense, right? Because you're starving out the enemy, right? That you're preventing them from getting resources and food and succor. But this doesn't even feel like that, because nothing that he does here couldn't be undone with the stroke of a pen, right? Like, Nigel Farage could just come in and be like, no, that's gone.
Still slows him down, though.
Maybe, but it'll be a day. It'll be a very, very small road bump. You know, it wouldn't be very difficult for Nigel Farage to get this through, I think. And, I mean, maybe you are right that he's trying to do all this, but to me it just screams desperation. I'm clinging on to power. I know everyone hates me, and there's no physical way they can remove me, so I'm just going to do everything I can, just throw stuff out there, just desperate, like, you know, this extending the child benefits cap. So just before Christmas, all of the single mothers with 12 children were like, oh yeah, this is going to really help our Christmas. Like, yeah, I bet it is. Mm. You know, it's costing everyone else £1,800 a year, but it's making your life better because you're making £6,000 a month or £10,000 a month or whatever it is. Like, this ridiculous nonsense that obviously isn't going to last. Mm. I think Keir Starmer, in this kind of fit of delusion in the Starmer bunker, is like, yeah, no, we can say we made that happen, guys. We did it. We brought John Lennon's Imagine into reality.
I mean, that's a nicer framing than what I use, which is that he's basically just decided he's got two priorities.
Yeah.
One is to do every spiteful socialist thing that he can do for the next 3 years. And two, make sure that he keeps those 3 years by appeasing Labour backbenchers.
Yes. Well, let's
actually, those two overlap anyway. So
let's move on to that, because recently he did an interview with Laura Kussenberg, the BBC, in which, as you can see, Keir Starmer tells the BBC he'll be Prime Minister in 2027. As in, he thinks he's going to last out this year. I guess they're going to delay all the May elections sufficiently so it's not a Labour wipeout.
Yeah, well, yes.
I mean, who knows if that will actually happen or not, but that's clearly the plan. And he just flatly intends to just not give up power. He is not going to accept the faults and failures of his government. He's not going to accept that he is not what the public are after. He's not going to accept that he doesn't really have a mandate to rule. And he's just going to legalistically say, well, you can't physically remove me, so I'm going to cling on no matter what.
Well, yes.
That's literally what he says. I mean, at 2 minutes in fact, let's watch this. It's really funny. Really, really funny. 2 minutes in.
Welcome to 2026.
I will be sitting in this seat by 2027, and if this long-form interview works, we can try it again in January of next year as well.
In September, we had a bit of a similar conversation. You said, look, I just need the space to do the job. Give me time. You'll show people. And since then, actually, your ratings have got Worse, more of your plans had to be ditched by your political decision-making. Even at the Royal Variety performance, someone impersonating you was booed. Now, by many measures, you are historically unpopular, even more unpopular than Liz Truss. Do you acknowledge that at the beginning of this year?
Look, I'm not surprised that people are frustrated. I completely get that. The truth is, since the crash in 08, most people haven't seen their living standards improved. They haven't seen their public services move in the right direction. They've seen them move in the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. And they've lost trust in politics. So when we went to the electorate in 2024 saying our manifesto pledge is change, many people said, yes, I want that change. I'm fed up. But then what happened is that people wanted the change to come more quickly. I actually really understand that because if, for example, you were 30, let's say, by way of example, in 2008 when the 08 crash, you've waited, you're now 47, and you will feel, well, a good chunk of my life has gone without things getting better. If you were perhaps 50, you would be near retirement now. You'd say, I want things to happen more quickly. So I actually do understand the frustration.
You can see that she's trying to interrupt, say, yes, yes, Prime Minister, but that is delusional nonsense and everyone hates you, you know.
I really like the bit where it cut to him while she was just listing his faults. That felt like a 90s comedy sketch.
It did, didn't it? Very much. And it like this, again, something about this that screams The Office to me. Mm. Like this kind of, you know, my what's the guy's name in The Office? David Brent. That kind of bumbling incompetence. And the fact that she's just trying to politely say yes, but everyone hates you and you should leave. You
know, yes.
You should leave. Anyway, towards the end...
And all he was talking about there was managed decline.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And the fact that, you know, people are going to feel what the changes the Labour government are going to bring in. It's like, you can see she's wincing like, yeah, that's the problem. You know, nobody wants the changes that you're bringing in.
But it did speak to me about if you were 30 in 2008, you're now 47 and you've just watched things get worse. And I'm like, yeah, but you're just... All you're promising me is that you're going to make things worse for the next 30 years.
Yeah, I mean, that's literally me. I was about that in 2008, and I'm about that now.
Yes.
And all I've seen is it getting worse, and all you're doing is more of the same to make it worse. And so, yeah, you're right, Keir.
Yeah.
I do agree with that, but you're the problem, you fool. Anyway.
And what is it? And he's not proposing a single thing different that hasn't already been tried since 2008. All it is let's make money cheaper, put debt up, and spend more on welfare. That's all they've done.
Correct. Anyway, towards the end, we get the question of leadership challenges. Let's jump in about here.
If there was a leadership challenge to you after May that you would walk away, or would you fight it under any circumstances?
Well, Laura, under the last government, we saw constant chopping and changing of leadership, of teams. It caused utter chaos. And it's amongst the reasons that the Tories were booted out so effectively at the last election. Nobody wants to go back to that. It's not in our national interest. We know from that evidence what happens if you go down that chaotic path.
There have also been many, many criticisms of you and you're chopping and changing and ditching policies and you turning on things and having all sorts of different strategies that never quite seem to stick. And it's been fascinating listening to you at length today. You seem pretty calm, you seem pretty confident. Maybe to some people's ears, you might sound a bit complacent.
No.
Delusional. Delusional. Like you were about to wipe your party out. The country hates you. Nobody wants what you're offering, and it's causing more of the same problems.
And Laura Coonsberg, she's a left. I mean, even by the standards of the BBC, she's a proper lefty.
And she's an establishment creature. Like, she doubtless has voted Labour her whole life.
Oh, I don't doubt it. Yeah.
Her whole life. And she's interviewing this Labour Prime Minister who seems. And you can see it on her face where she's just like. Okay, this guy is not in touch with reality. Like, your party is going to crater. Everyone hates you and you will never be elected again. This is probably the last Labour government that's ever going to exist. And Keir Starmer is just deranged, saying, no, there won't be any leadership challenges. I will not give up power.
I mean, she's not really talking to him in a fundamentally different way to the way that a mother speaks to a six-year-old who's just announced they want to be an astronaut.
except that she's actually being more conciliatory, actually.
Yes.
You know, like, you know, well, maybe you can, son, maybe. She's not even giving him that. You know, she's just like, yeah, okay. All right. You know. Embarrassing.
And I think what we need is an AC-30 gunship, a few helicopters, a Delta team, and a black bag over the head. I mean, that is basically the only way that he's going.
It's the only way he's going to get any public sympathy. It's kind of mad. It's kind of mad how, like I said, he just... And notice that when she asks a direct question, he should answer it directly, but instead he starts waffling around the question. Mm. He doesn't address, well, are there going to be any leadership challenges? Well, we don't want Tory chaos. Mm. It's like, yeah, okay, but we're not looking at Tory chaos. What we're looking at is the most hated Prime Minister in history, who has overstayed his welcome, and everyone's wondering when he's going to leave.
I can kind of see what he's trying to do. What he tried to do there a couple of times was the Blair move.
Yes.
And the Blair move is... Yes, I understand your concerns, and he says it in a reasonable voice, and then he moves on and he smoothly pivots. The problem is you need at least a 7 or 8 in your politics stat in order to do that, and he's got a 3.
Also, you need at least some kind of constituency that cares about your government.
Yes.
Right? Like, Tony Blair, you know, probably never went below about 35, 36% in the polls.
And that was the thing I said. There is something fundamentally different between 30 and 20. I don't know what happens there, but you just can't govern once below. I don't know why.
I agree. Like, Tony Blair was never at 17% in the polls. No. You know, he was never at, like, 13% approval rating.
Yes.
You know, he was never minus 58 underwater.
And as soon as he realised he was going below 30%, he was like, yeah, Gordon Brown, it's all yours. Off you go.
Yeah. Yeah, not my problem now, right? And so Keir Starmer just, he seems completely delusional about what they're doing. And, I mean, Rachel Reeves, with the budget, she knows there's nowhere to go. The only person who doesn't seem that delusional is actually Shabana Mahmood, who is like, yeah, screw these foreigners. Sorry, no, we're going to deport them. We're going to just start, you know, like, we're just going to start doing the far right stuff because it has to be done. She's the only person.
But they will not make her leader because Labour does not put women or browns in the leadership position.
No, that's exactly right. They only have straight white men. I mean, like, look at, like...
Well, hang on.
What?
You used one extra word.
Oh, then. Straight.
Yes.
Purportedly, they're straight white men.
He's married, so...
Yeah, he's married, he's got kids. So.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, you've got Jess Phillips with the rape gang inquiry that makes her look delusional. She's like, oh, it's just all sexual assault ever. She's mad. David Lammy on a mission from God to destroy the British justice system. Yeah, okay, mad.
And have child soldiers.
Yeah. Rachel Reeves thinking that she can pull the economy back, mad. Keir Starmer, literally like Hitler in the bunker, moving around phantom divisions. The Labour government is just insane. And seem to be completely incapable of addressing the real issues of the country, right? They seem to be completely incapable of accepting their own position and accepting what actually will be the next issue, the next battlefield on which all of this is fought. But the thing is, Keir Starmer keeps saying this. This is a clip from this interview. I'm just going to pull out. Keir Starmer does keep saying this, as in somewhere underneath all of the cope, the layers of cope that Keir Starmer and his government currently live under, they do understand that something has gone terribly wrong with our own sense of self. And this came out in the Island of Strangers speech that he disavowed afterwards. Obviously, I didn't
mean... The one good speech he ever made.
I didn't mean to tell you the truth and sound like Enoch Powell. And in here, this has gone kind of under the radar recently. But I think this is actually very, very interesting.
You seem very cheerful, and some people might be almost surprised that you're optimistic because you've had a very torrid time. I mean, I thought your resolution might be that you're still sitting in that seat by 2027.
Well, I will be sitting in this seat by 2027, and if this long-form interview works, we can try it again in January of next year as well.
But you know, and everyone watching knows, that there are even some people on your own side who think 2026... might have to be the end. Some of them want you out. How are you going to stop that happening?
Well, I think what's really important is that we are clear about what we have achieved already. And there's a huge amount that we've achieved in terms of the economy. Wages have gone up more quickly in the first year under this government than in the first 10 years under the previous government. Inflation is coming down, and the Bank of England are clear that it's on track to meet target by spring or summer of this year. We've had 6 interest rate cuts in a row, so it's now dropping at a rate which is the highest pace of drop for 17 years, since the crash, in fact. And of course, the IMF are clear that we had the second, or likely to have the second highest growth in the G7 in 2025. On top of that, obviously, we've done a lot of work on education, on free school meals, on breakfast clubs, towering down on child poverty. So there's a huge amount that's been done. And
just as a quick pause there, isn't that a damning indictment of the rest of the G7 if we're the ones with the highest growth?
Yeah. I mean,
were we in recession in the last quarter?
I might pinch that clip for Brokenomics and just take apart every single claim in there. I mean, just the absolute cliff notes. I mean, okay, fine, wages might have risen, but so have taxes.
Yeah.
And so your take-home pay has gone down.
It's inflation.
The bit about inflation going... Yeah, inflation. And actually, he says inflation has gone down. What he means by that is it's still going up.
But the rate of decline has petered off.
And because it's a compounding function, it has to do that. Otherwise, basically, money becomes infinite very quickly.
And it would only matter if it had been deflationary.
Right? Yes.
That what he's implying is that we've had a deflationary effect.
No, he's making you think the price level has come down. It hasn't. It's gone up.
Exactly. Yep. And so, like, all of this deranged. It's delusional. Yes. It's a lie. I mean,
I could pick apart every single element of that.
Yes. And I knew you would be able to. Like, it's so obvious that he's just not living in the real world.
No.
But then he comes to this bit, and this bit is what I think is genuinely interesting. But sorry, notice how this wasn't the same clip as before. I actually thought this was the same clip.
I thought when you started it, I forgot, and then I thought, oh, hang on, this is different.
She just brings up the same point over and over because she's trying to get... Look,
and he gave the same stock answer.
No, he gave a different stock answer.
Oh, did he?
Yeah,
oh.
Well, he talks around in different ways.
No, he said, oh, I think I'll still be sat here and talking.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We'll be doing this. Yeah, yeah. So that element was the same stock answer.
Yeah, of course. He's got this conviction, presumably from God, that he's going to be the Prime Minister in 2027. And the thing is, maybe he will be. Maybe the Labour Party are just going to be so stupid as to be like, yeah, no, we're just lemmings off the cliff. We don't care.
Well, the other option is Ed Miliband, so... There's that.
Oh, yeah, I guess, you know, like, but maybe they've come to peace with it. Maybe they're like, yeah, no, we are going to just hit the cliff and just keep going. And that'll be it. That's the end of the Labour Party. We're the last. And we accept it. But anyway, yeah, like you say, you can see her trying to get him onto the point of, come on, guys, you know, this isn't really reflecting reality. But then he comes out with this.
That leaves out of account the cut to NHS waiting lists, gone down by 300,000, 5 million extra appointments. And so people are always focusing, as happens in politics, on other things that might have happened. But actually, if you look at what's already happened, we've got a lot to be very proud of. I'm really pleased that as we turn into 2026, some of the things we're legislating for that take time will now come on stream in 2026. And that's why... I am looking forward to 2026.
I'm optimistic. I think I've got the wrong link here.
All the same,
that's interesting.
I didn't even listen to that one. I just watched the body language.
Yeah.
And if you just got AI and got them to keep everything exactly the same except put him in pajamas, you'd be watching a very patient healthcare worker speaking with a man with dementia.
Yes.
And she's like trying not to upset him, but at the same time she doesn't want to let him dive into his delusions any further.
Yeah. Sorry, it was this clip that I wanted to talk about.
Right.
But actually, no, I'm glad we brought that up because you are right. Like, she's constantly trying to politely interrupt, say, okay, you're not addressing the point that I'm trying to bring up, which is your terminal.
Yeah.
Your government is terminal and you need to think about making arrangements, writing a will, you know, you need to think about...
You need to do some planning here. You need to make amends with any loved ones that you've got a you know, crossword against. You know?
Yeah.
And he just doesn't want to accept it. He's like, no, I'm fine.
Yeah, no, the economy's great. Look at all the great things we're legislating for that people are going to be thrilled about. It's like, nobody wants digital ID care.
Yep.
Nobody wants the abolition of jury trials. Nobody wants a realignment with the EU. So with a vassal of the EU. Nobody asked for any of these things, Keir. But anyway, so he talks about this. This is like the one thing that I think he has some sense of correctness on. But even then, he ends up on exactly the wrong side of the issue.
The next election is going to be unlike any election we've seen in this country for a very, very long time.
That's
because
true.
My strong view is it'll be a Labour government up against a very right-wing proposition in reform. And that reform proposition will be a proposition of toxic divide of this country. The next election is going to be about a question of what is it to be British? Mm-hmm. And I believe to be British is to be compassionate, reasonable, live and let live, and diverse. And I am proud to serve our diverse country and all of its parts. It is British to be diverse. And that is the essence of Britishness. That will be challenged at the next election by reform. And this country, if reform wins, will be torn apart in a toxic way. And my strong sense of history tells me that if a right-wing proposition like that gets in with that toxic divide and things don't go the way they pretend they will and they won't, they will move to the right, to the right, to the right.
I mean, God willing.
They should have ended that with, and here ends a party political broadcast by the Reform Party, sponsored by Nigel Farage.
If I were running the Reform Party, that's what I would do. But so, I mean, like this just, it very interesting, right? So the idea that the very right-wing proposition in reform.
Yes.
I mean, I'm not seeing it.
Please.
Yeah, I would love that to be the case. But
for once in my life, I want to be able to vote for a right-wing party, which is the right-wing party that lives in the imagination of lefties.
Exactly, right? Like, yeah. They've been calling Nigel Farage Hitler. They have been, saying, you know, oh, it's going to be a proposition of a toxic divide. And meanwhile, Nigel Farage is like, hey, here's the next mayor of London. She's a Muslim. Now, I don't dislike Lalia Cunningham at all. She's very clever, very smart.
I mean, to be fair, you have to be a Muslim to win in London because we have crossed the divide between sectarian
politics. London's only 30% Muslim, right?
Yeah, but they vote as a block and nobody else does.
Well, I mean, as we saw from the London thing earlier, actually, where is it? Actually, you say that.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Right, but a lot of minorities in London are not necessarily committed to the Labour Party or to Islam. Right?
I mean, the reason Sadiq Khan wins is because he gets 30% plus whatever you would normally get.
Exactly, because there's a big split of parties that there could be, right? It doesn't have to be that way.
No.
And so,
I mean, the other thing I've got to pick up on is his statement that to be British is diverse.
Well, we'll get to that in a second.
Oh, okay.
Because this is the thing, like, Zia Yusuf, Lalia Cunningham, like, these are the two current stars of the Reform Party, and they're both Muslims. Now, there are a lot of people online who are very hardline about this, like, no Muslims ever. And I'm like, okay, but being practical, actually, like, Zia Yusuf has been quite right-wing recently, and he's been quite nativist on questions.
On paper, he's the soundest of all of them.
Yeah, but Lalia Cunningham has also been really good in various interviews and panel shows she's been on, right? So I can see from Nigel Farage's position why he's employing these people as lieutenants in the mission.
Well, that's because he sacks everybody who's white and based.
That's correct. At the moment, he's currently asking Dr. Chris Parry to resign or to apologise. Dr. Chris Parry, former Rear Admiral. I think he was the guy who he did a bunch of military stuff that's currently all over Twitter. But the point is, he's exactly the kind of venerable British military man who, I mean, like, you know, comes back and has a significant place in British politics.
Parliament used to be full of guys like that.
Yes. You know, literally like a sort of Wellington type, right? Parliament used to be full of guys like this. And after David Lammy was like, we the Caribbean community need reparations, he was like, well, why don't you just go home then? And Nigel Farage was like,
the only correct answer. Nigel Farage immediately hates it.
He literally came out and was like, well, he should apologise for that. And it's like, oh, but David Lammy is literally on a mission from God to abolish jury trials, Nigel. He wants you to pay him trillions of pounds. Maybe David should go home. You know, maybe we're sick of it.
Nigel.
But you can see that Nigel is just, again, not the right winger that they think he is. And is just like, yeah, I'll just, you know, send these guys out. And like I said, they are clever and doing a good job. So, I don't think they're Islamists or anything like that. But I can see the argument on the other side, which is, well, why can't we have native representation? Why do we have to have...
Well, because Nigel sacks him immediately.
Exactly. Yeah, but why is the political environment so that a white British person can only advocate for foreign interests, or they get sacked if they want to advocate for native interests? Only for...
Uma Truth regime, I guess.
Tim Stanley tweeted out the other day, and, you know, got completely destroyed on this, saying, I've been saying for a long time that, you know, white people may have failed, but social conservatism will be brought back in by like Kemi Badenoch and Lalia Cunningham. Mm. And it's like, okay, but that's only because we're not allowed. It's, you know, it's only because you have been part of the council. Remember who sat with Ash Sarkar, all nodding their head and agreeing because they're both basically communists. Yeah. It was that guy. And, he's like an insane simp for Kemi Badenoch. And it's like, yeah, but that's because you just... call everyone who does that, if they're white, a racist.
Yes.
You know, and it's literally, you know, so that now even the immigrants are like, no, we need some conservatism. You can't have this nonsense. Mm. You know, and so that's been brought in. But anyway, so yeah, getting to his statement here.
The diverse bit.
Yeah.
There you go, yeah.
All of its parts, it is British to be diverse.
I mean, a divergent literally means to stop being a thing and be something else.
Yes.
That's literally what it means. So what he's saying is to be British is to be... is to not be British.
Well, what I love about this, it is British to be diverse. So Lebanon is now British. Pakistan is British.
That's
it's
true.
Full of different tribes. Yep. India couldn't be more British. Like there are something, how many, there's like 2,000 languages, ethnic groups in India, something like that. It's mad.
If there is life forms on Proxima Centauri B, they're British. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. It's like this is a preposterous statement. Like it's genuine, again, the delusion, and you can see the tension in his face here when he's saying this, right? He really means this. Like this, he's very concerned that Nigel Farage will come out and say, England is for the English, Britain is for the native British, and that means that the rest of them will go home. He's worried about this. This is what's on in his mind here, because what he's saying, if you're not diverse, you're not British. So Britain, prior to 1948, was not British.
No, not at all.
Because the Windrush hadn't
turned up. Nothing Britain about Britain for the last 2,000 years.
World spanning.
Britain started being British when HMS Windrush arrived.
That is literally what he's saying with this. Literally what he's saying. Britain isn't Britain if there aren't foreigners around. And it's like, right, you're mad, right?
Yes.
You are right that the next election will be a question of identity, because we're going to make it a question of identity. Like the online right are going to make it a question of identity, and you will have to commit. And Keir Starmer has committed to the worst interpretation of the wrong side of the argument. Right? Like, there are softer interpretations on the wrong side of the argument. It's like, well, I mean, you have the British Empire, so you did always have this kind of fuzzy border to Britishness that included non-native British people.
Yes.
And so, you know, this it is something that is up for question. But Keir Starmer's like, no, it's the brown foreigners who are really British because they're diverse, and the white English and native people are not diverse, and so they are not the British.
The difference is that we've been thinking about these issues and how to frame these issues for at least 20 years.
Yes.
He started thinking about these issues in the summer of 2024.
Yes.
When Axel Rudakabana walked into that dance studio. That was the first time he'd ever tried to formulate an argument, and there is no intellectual depth on the left at all to even have to even frame the conversation.
Correct.
If we have a discussion on this territory, I mean, we can't not win. It's a Jedi Master versus a Padawan.
Yes. And so he is looking into the face of his impending destruction and basically realizing, I'm going to commit to the orthodoxy, even though the orthodoxy is the thing that will get me destroyed. I can't. I've literally come out here and said that to be British is to be a foreigner. You can't be British unless you have foreigners around. So there are all manner of, like, you know, tiny villages all along the sort of north and southwest and in Wales and in Scotland that don't have a single foreigner in them. So they're not British.
I mean, it is the meme of looking at a beautiful bit of countryside and thinking, this needs Bomalians.
Well, it's not British until it gets the Bomalians.
Yes. Yes.
That it is British to be diverse is the most mental statement. Like, as if the British don't... Like, what is he even using to the word British to mean? Do the British exist prior to diversity? No, because to be diverse is to be British. Like, it's mad that he would say something like this. And
there's this weird paradoxical logic here that a thing can only be a thing when it ceases to be a thing.
Yes.
I'm going to have to speak to ChatGPT to get me through the logic on that one, because it's so...
It's nonsense.
Inside out.
Well, there's a lot of philosophical thought on the sort of question and law of identity. Right. And Keir Starmer has jettisoned all of it. And he's saying, right. No, the thing is not the identical to itself. Actually, yeah. The thing is identical to other things. So it violates the law of identity. But but
Carl Pilkington could get this.
Of course. Because Keir Starmer is ideologically committed.
This is the midwit meme in action.
It's more than that. It's, he is committed to having an infinite number of foreigners in the country, right? He can't conceive of a Britain, even though he grew up in it,
yes,
that isn't overwhelmingly flooded by foreigners.
That's true. Your brain on Marxism.
Yeah, completely. And he's completely committed to it. The idea of going and even questioning, do we need so many foreigners? I mean, that would literally be saying, well, should we be making Britain less British? Like, yes. To him, like, for us, introducing more foreigners is making Britain less British, but for him, it's making it more British. And so we want diametrically opposed things, and he will fight tooth and nail, which is why he's so reluctant to give up power to what he considers is Nazi Nigel Farage, which is obviously not true anyway, but he's deranged. He is a man who is not in touch with reality.
I hope he lives to see one of our guys, really our guys, come to power.
Well, we're going to keep going right and right and right.
I am tumescent in my anticipation.
We'll leave that there.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Did you know that parents rank teaching financial literacy as the toughest life skill? That's where Greenlight comes in, the debit card and money app made for families. With Greenlight, you can send money to kids quickly, set up chores, automate allowance, and track spending with real-time notifications. Kids learn how to earn, save, and spend responsibly, while parents have peace of mind knowing smart money habits are being built with guardrails in place. Try Greenlight risk-free today at greenlight.com/trygreenlight. That's greenlight.com/trygreenlight.